Let's do some American dreaming, shall we?
I have a dream.
What's happening to us?
The American dream.
A better way of life.
The great American
dream.
Well, tell me you don't know what that is. Okay, well, it's actually quite all right if you don't.
My piece of the American dream.
What everybody wants as they start out.
Securing your portion of the American dream.
In my American dream, the people do make a difference.
You seem to know what the American dream is. You've been calling us at 877-8-MYTIG.
American dream is definitely still around and still alive. There's plenty of people coming from outside this country and living in this country that are achieving the goals that they set out to achieve. However, the government, well, that's a whole different story.
On our website, Jamaica writes to us, the American dream is not about an unfettered trajectory into the financial stratosphere. It's about plotting our course to fashion innovative solutions to new challenges. Americans are scrappy, creative, and tenacious. Leah Clark from Rochester, Michigan, do you see what you've started here?
Good morning.
Do you see what you've started here?
I'm excited about it.
Your speculation about the American dream being not what it used to be and that young people will be able to see through it has really caused some thought on the part of our listeners as well. Will you hold on there?
Yeah.
We're going to take a look at what the American dream actually represents down through history. And joining us, we have a great person to explain to us these arcs of history that you can hear in voices that are quite familiar.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
They called it Little Havana, where the American dream had a price tag.
A nagging fear that America's decline is inevitable, that the next generation must lower its sights.
From JFK to Scarface to Barack Obama speaking just last month, David Camp joins us. He has the cover story in Vanity Fair. He's the author of numerous books, including The United States of Arugula, the sun-dried, cold-pressed, dark-roasted, extra virgin story of the American food revolution. But the American dream is your subject in the current issue of Vanity Fair. And your article really spans the bit of history we played there. Where does the American dream come from?
Well, I had no idea, and it's funny, people just use this phrase so promiscuously and freely, and as we've heard from your listeners, everyone's got a different definition of it. So I thought, let's go to the source. And I was surprised to learn that this is a relatively recent coinage. It was only in the last Great Depression, 1931, that a historian named James Truslow Adams wrote a book called The Epic of America. A badly reviewed book, and it's kind of a weird subjective history of the United States. But the one very interesting thing he did was say, I'm going to get to the point of, you know, what is it that makes the United States unique vis-a-vis other countries? And he came up with this concept called the American dream.
Now, the starting point in the Depression was that the American dream was very abstract. It was a feeling. It was a sensibility. It wasn't necessarily a tangible acquisition of wealth at that point, was it?
No, it was much more about a sense of possibility and opportunity. It was about the freedom that this country gives its citizens and immigrants versus other countries, you know, where you're born into a sense of social hierarchy and class, and you must do the job that your father did, or you must live in the same place. And the United States was just, it was about possibility and opportunity, whether you were rich or whether you were poor, a level of opportunity and possibility that no other country offers.
You know, David, one of the things that really struck me about your article was the pictures. In addition to the text, you have these images, or the magazine has these images that run alongside it of what the American dream looked like to different people at different times. So you've got this, you know, prototypical white suburban family, and they're actually quite gorgeous, you know, 50s living room. Who participated in what we think of as the American dream, and who was left out?
Well, if we look at those pictures, what they were from Life magazine, and they were actually art directed by Norman Rockwell. The photographers took those pictures, but Rockwell was actually on hand to direct them, to make them look sort of like Rockwell paintings. And they are this sort of slightly antiseptic, idealized version of mid-century suburban life. And a lot of what you're seeing is sort of the idealized life that, you know, returning GIs took on in the mid-century when, you know, the first moment of the baby boom and economic prosperity. And yeah, it was a very white bread vision, Levittown which is the idealized suburban tract of that era.
Tell the story of Bill Levitt. I mean, Levittown is named after him. He had a particular idea and really germinated the home ownership as a notion of having the American dream.
Because, again, the American dream up until the post-war period didn't really have a specific material component to it. It was more an abstract ideal than a specific one. And Bill Levitt was this guy who came from a building family. He worked in the Pacific Theater building airfields very quickly, and he applied this know-how when he got back to these potato fields he'd bought in Long Island and decided to build suburban tract homes. And the GI Bill enabled returning GIs to buy homes for low-interest loans, no money down.
Especially and white families.
Especially,
though.
Yeah, there were no black families allowed in Levittown because Bill Levitt was a racist. But the idea, and then George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life, you remember, opens Bailey Park. He was a little more pluralistic and open. He brought Mr. Martini in, the grateful saloon keeper, the Italian immigrant, to open his, you know, to christen his development.
So from that point, then, and you can track the amount of American consumer debt from the 1940s to the 1970s exploding, you know, the American dream becomes an acquisition of enormous outsized wealth way beyond Levittown.
Well, I wouldn't say enormous and outsized up to the 70s. It seems like, you know, for all of the turbulence of the 60s and 70s, there was kind of a sweet spot where people, you know, were a little less overly cautious than they might have been in the immediate aftermath of the Depression, you know, and taking on debt, you know, to expand and pursue your dreams, whether it's opening a business or buying a home, getting a home loan, is not in and of itself a bad thing. It really only accelerated into kookiness really in the last two decades or so. So for all the weirdness we associate with the 70s, maybe that time was when the balance was best between thrift and borrowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, David, we also still have Leah Clark with us from Rochester, Michigan. And Leah, you made this point that really got us going about how you didn't want what you thought the American dream was. But do you think that you're redefining the American dream?
I hope so. I think as a country that we can redefine what we think we need and what we think we have to have and really live according to our conscience, that maybe we don't need these, you know, large houses, that we can get something affordable, ideally sustainable, that's enough to live with and to not be in tons of debt and have it become a burden to us.
That's a great thought. David Camp, before we go, are Americans maybe the best definers of the American dream, or is it people outside the United States maybe?
Well, I think it's up to us to define what it means, and I think Leah's done an excellent job of doing it. What I say at the conclusion of my piece is very much like what Leah says. It's that I think we have to get away from this ridiculous idea that each generation must outpace and outlive standard of living-wise the next. And the phrase I say is, let's consider the idea of simple continuity, the perpetuation of a contented, sustainable, middle-class way of life, where the standard of living remains happily constant from one generation to the next.
Something sustainable. David Camp from Vanity Fair, thanks so much for joining us. Leah Clark, will you live with continuity off the grid there?
I will try.
Thanks so much. We are talking all this week about the new American dream. What does it mean to you, and how has it changed throughout the course of this recession? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.